Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
The Christmas and Hanukkah Week podcast here on DenverBroncos.com. I'm Andrew Mason. Thanks as always for joining me alongside me. As always, from the Broncos Radio Network, 850 and 94.1 KOA, Denver Sports 760. I think I covered everything there.
Good enough.
Andy Lindahl, happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you too.
Is it a happy holiday season around the Broncos? That's a big question.
Well, Andrew, you and I have been saying if you don't get some things switched up, this is what we'd be staring at. And now they're staring at what I hate the most about this, if I'm just going to be honest for the moment, of the last four games, and we knew they'd be tough, and Tennessee identified itself, I thought, as a tough opponent by about early November. But of the last four games, this was the one I was most worried about you winning as we looked at you going down the home stretch, because Arrowhead's a very tough place to win, just like Sports Authority Field is a very tough place to win. So this was the one I felt they needed the mulligan for, and now you don't have it. So now we find out what happens.
Yeah, going to Arrowhead Stadium where the Broncos are 3-13 all-time in December. Although they did win their last they've won a couple of recent December games, one in 09 and the other one would be in, I believe it was 2013, when Peyton Manning was on his record-setting pace. But this is a very tough spot. I mean, even though the Chiefs, they're certainly a team that has some flaws, but there are two things you have to do against them, and they succeed in these areas very well. You have to make sure you win the turnover battle, and you have to prevent them from getting a touchdown off of a return. The Broncos did neither back in Week 12. Predictably, they lost. There were a lot of other factors, but the Chiefs did the things that they usually do when they win.
You know what I noticed is from the time that Derek Johnson also went out in that Raider game, they have not been as good against the run, hands down to me. I don't think they are as stout against the run as they were, and unfortunately, the Broncos are still trying to work some kinks out, shall we say, frankly, to put it nicely, in that area of their game. Hopefully, now look, Justin Forsett looked good to me. He looked like a veteran who knew where the cutback lanes were. I think he's what I hope Devontae Booker would pick up from Justin is run a little more patiently. Let your alignment get out in front of you. Let them try at times to set some blocks. I realize sometimes there's nothing there to be fair.
And when nothing's there, you've got to be able to plow forward for that 1 yard you need. There was a play, the Broncos, I think, had second and one, and there's nothing there for Forsett at all, and he just burrows his way through. You know, he through heavy contact, gets the first down, you go on to the next set of downs. That's the kind of play also that I think Devontae Booker can learn by watching, because too often he's still going down right at the first contact.
Yeah, he's got to learn to break tackles, something that he would have seen C.J. Anderson do more and more. This is the time of year I always believe that you really miss C.J. Anderson. I was saying it to people when he went down. C.J., I understand, you know, sometimes people expect the 100-150-yard game all the time. Where CJ becomes special, where he becomes a potent back, is that back half of the season. He still runs physically. He still breaks the tackles. He still seems to have a spring in his legs that other guys don't have. Other guys are worn down. They don't tackle him as easy. So, no, CJ in his career doesn't necessarily come out like a house of fire. But, again, look at the Super Bowl run. I'll point it to that as the perfect example. He was breaking tackles and making runs last year as guys wore down towards the end of the year, and you really could use a guy like that who at times – and playing behind some almost similar conditions with the offensive line last year, made some things happen on his own to make sure you got 3 yards to your point instead of losing two.
Yeah. And speaking of the offensive line, same starting five last week as has usually been the case, but they worked Billy Turner in there for one series each half. And I think obviously they want to get a look at Billy Turner, certainly if you – go over the course of the season, the Broncos have had some injuries. They've had to make moves to let go of guys off the 53-man roster to bring someone up from the practice squad or bring in a Justin Forsett. But all the while, with all those moves, they hung on to Billy Turner. So clearly they saw something. And Turner, he's comfortable in zone blocking. When Miami drafted him in 2014, John Benton, who was Kubiak's O-line coach in Houston, was a Dolphins O-line coach when they were trying to rebuild that entire unit after the Richie Incognito bullying scandal. And the Dolphins let him go, then the Ravens had him briefly, they let him go, Broncos brought him in. And he played those two series, and I wonder if he might not get more reps, and then if there might be a domino effect, if there might be some more shuffling beyond that.
Yeah, because now you're in this weird position the Broncos have not been in 5 years. And that is trying to evaluate on the fly. You're trying to make the playoffs, which has been the familiar scenario.
Mm-hmm. Usually they've been in by now.
Right. And now what you're trying to do is figure out, I think the team does need to figure out, because let's be honest about it, I don't think you and I expect this starting five to be the starting five next year.
No. Nope.
There's going to be a tweak, if not more, somewhere. We'll wait to ultimately see how that plays out. But the bottom line is this. You need to get a look at some of these guys in game action. You can't get it all. They've got no contact come the off season, and I think you've got to get a look at a guy like Billy Martin. Maybe Ferentz plays some more. Billy Turner. Yeah. Well, I'm tired, Andrew, and we're not the Yankees. So.
Well, anyways. And actually, there's a Christmas theme to Billy Martin. Of course, he died on Christmas Day in 1989.
I'd love to tell you that that's where my mind was. I'm just the game screwing up.
I remember I think they broke into the Monday Night Football game. It was Cincinnati and Minnesota to say that Billy Martin had died. That's where I first heard it.
So playing on Christmas, I guess not to completely change the page here, isn't so much a new thing.
Oh, gosh, no.
NFL almost savors it, don't they?
The longest game in NFL history was on Christmas Day, 1971. Chiefs-Dolphins, double overtime at Old Municipal Stadium. It was actually the last football game played at Municipal Stadium before the Chiefs moved into Arrowhead.
Well, then one of my small stocking stuffers needs to be not a repeat of the Chiefs having another one of the longest games on Christmas Day. I'd like to get this one over with, and let's get back home. Look, if the Broncos can do what they need to do, and I think that's going to involve a little bit more running than we've seen the last couple of weeks, because, again, I do think the Chiefs are a little more vulnerable to it. Now, they're going to get some guys back that weren't in the lineup the first time these two teams met, including Dontari Poe, that's going to be Dontari Poe and Dee Ford, two new challenges for this Bronco offensive line. But they need to run because of that. The pass rush could be more potent than it was, and it was pretty darn good when it was here in Denver.
Well, Poe is particularly problematic. I like that alliteration, by the way. With Matt Paradis still having the hip issues that he's had. He's played through them in the games. He's missed a fair amount of practice time as they've given him rest days. But there have been a few times the last few weeks where it seems like Matt Paradis on the field, he's hurting a little bit when he's trying to get low. And it seemed like the Patriots actually went right at Paradis and focused. You know, they would try to make that the point of attack a few times on Sunday. And they got some good results for them from that.
Yeah, it's a mean league, isn't it? Anybody that thinks, I mean, they don't care if you're hurt. Nobody says, oh, man, that guy's hurt too bad. Nope, you're hurt, we're coming right at you. Mm-hmm. Because, again, they say if you're in the game, then you're not injured, you're just hurt, and you have to fight through the pain. And I think Matt Paradis, something tells me we may hear, he'll be one of those guys in the postseason press conferences where they'll start to tell us in the offseason, I should say, press conferences, they start to tell us just how bad things really were for him this year and how much respect he earned in the locker room. That would be my gut feel on it.
It would be my gut feeling as well. And the fact that it's been referenced that, you know, that in the last few weeks it was one hip, now it's issues in both hips. And he's still going out there and playing. We don't know the severity of it. Obviously, again, like Andy said, we're going to probably hear more about it when we get to the off season. But certainly what he's had to battle through, anytime you're talking about a hip problem, That's something that can be serious. And so, you know, it says a lot about him, says a lot about the timber from which he's cut, but I'm not surprised. He's there's a lot of tough guys in his family. It's a lot of tough guys up in Idaho as well.
Yeah, Jeb Putzier, the old tight end, glows about him all the time because, you know, they're Idaho boys. But, look, and congrats to him. We should name, you know, an alternate, but I think the conditions that Matt has played under with the injury situation, and I don't think people really understand even how far back this injury goes. We've heard whispers of it long before I think it became public knowledge. He's really gutted out most of the year.
And played well for the most part.
And is still a Pro Bowl alternate. Mm-hmm. That says all you need to know about Matt
and
Paradis.
And probably should have been in the Pro Bowl, honestly. Usually the recognition, particularly for interior offensive linemen, comes 1 year after the emergence. I think Matt Paradis has played at a Pro Bowl level for all the problems on the offensive line. He has been, I think some weeks, quite frankly, he's been the guy that's really separated the entire blocking scheme from disaster. He's been that good.
I agree with you. Now again, you got to figure some other things out there. You know, I still think, I know this may not be a popular opinion, I still think Russell Okung has a future here.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody that tells me that you want to get rid of Russell Okung, I'm going to ask you what's your other better option. And I still know from guys that I talk to that know him and know this locker room, he's still a leader. He's still a voice that they respect. Now, I know he was a figure point in the Michael Silver article as to not being allowed to speak by Aqib Talib.
But being a leader is why he spoke up in the first place.
And as it's been explained to me by, again, some guys that know everybody involved, it wasn't a Russell Okung situation. It was a fact that Aqib Talib in particular, because he was named in some of the defense in general, they didn't want to hear any more talk. They want to see action. And you know what? Look, that's a fair sentiment out of their side. And I think the reason why you're not hearing more griping about it is I think the offense knows it's a fair sentiment. I don't think any of them are happy that this story got out, and I think that would upset them more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody in that locker room understands why the frustration exists. We talk to the offensive players all the time. They're not sitting back throwing their hands up going, hey, we're doing our job. They're not under any false impression. This has not gone the way they've wanted it to this year, from the coaches to the players offensively. And so something finally made out into the public eye. I'd also offer, I don't know that this isn't terribly unusual. It's unusual you got the full story.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and maybe not a bad thing, to be honest with you, to have that out in the public sphere.
I'll tell you one reason why it's not a bad thing. It shows you how much these guys care. Mm-hmm. I will tell you this. This is not a team. I don't know how this is all going to end up, because now we're in a situation where even the 10 wins you and I have talked about, that may not get you in anymore, because Miami and Baltimore and Pittsburgh all continue to win. So the 10-win plateau may make you in a tiebreaker situation, whereas before I thought it would give you one more win than the rest of the field.
Need a Baltimore loss before the Broncos play Sunday. And if Buffalo, Buffalo is still in it. And maybe there's going to be a little bit of a win one for Rex Ryan, because, you know, he's under siege right now, and there's a lot of rumors flying. Maybe Buffalo at home against Miami, you'd think, I mean, that's a game they probably should win. They played close down in Miami and the Dolphins won. And if you get those two results, then maybe you're stepping onto the field and you are almost entirely back in control of your fate. Now, I say almost entirely because there's that scenario at 10-6 where if the Chiefs lose in Week 17, the Broncos win both their games, including one against Kansas City, and then Miami loses one game, then Miami and Kansas City advance, and the Broncos are out on a tiebreak at 10-6.
Well, and I'll tell you this. I know it's not natural for Bronco fans. You better root for the Raiders to win, too, because if the Raiders win, Miami will have a New England team wanting to hold on to home field advantage, and it will give them motivation to make sure on New Year's Day that they're playing guys.
And I would expect that if Oakland has a chance at home field advantage, if they stay, you know, they stay within a step of the Patriots, that they will make sure the Patriots play the Patriots Dolphins game. They would make sure that game was played in the late afternoon window, not the early windows. Kind of like the soccer thing where you want everyone that's in competition with each other to play at the same time, so there's not anybody laying down or anything like that.
Well, and that can happen, to your point, for those that don't know, because we don't have a Sunday night game yet, right? They pick one off the schedule.
All the buzz is leaning toward Green Bay, Detroit.
Green Bay, Detroit, and Tennessee. Tennessee, is it Tennessee?
Tennessee, Houston in
is
Tennessee.
A possibility of all things, too.
But the way things are,
the worst division in football.
I would actually guess that may be the spotlight game
on CBS.
The early game. That may be the spotlight early game.
Okay. Well, look, my point is this. This Bronco team did not fall in love with itself and get complacent this year. They hate losing, and that's a good thing. And so though none of us likes to see this stuff coming out of a locker room, here's the bottom line. It tells you how many guys want to win, and they don't like it when they don't. And that's a good thing to have around your franchise, because plenty of people get that trophy, plenty of teams get that trophy, then it's all about the money, and the winning comes second, and that's not the case here.
It's like fire. The tension in the locker room, it's like fire. Now, if you can, you know, fire can be of great benefit if properly monitored. If it gets out of control, then you've got an issue. And I think right now what the Broncos have, there is some tension. There is some dynamic tension, but there was dynamic tension in last year's locker room as well. Didn't always get out, but there were some back and forth. And one thing about the defense offense narrative, I'll say this. The offense, like you said, they know that the slings and arrows are coming their way. They know that they've only accounted for 26 points in the last three games. And there's enough guys in that locker room who were around in 2013, 2014, when 26 points was, frankly, a letdown. And now we're talking about that same amount of points in three games. I think, you know, there's some frustration knowing what things were at one point. And, you know, now obviously the defense is still playing lights out. But statistically speaking, you know, that they're going to be one of the best pass defenses ever if they hold their form the next two games. In fact, actually may be a better pass defense than they were last year. They're number two in the league in total defense now, only trailing Houston. So the defense certainly has pulled its weight and has had a very good encore. They'd like to defend the run better, but on the whole, an encore that was probably about as good as you could expect.
This defense, and I'll continue to say it, nobody in the AFC wants it in the playoffs. Nobody wants it in the playoffs.
Look at the Patriots' game plan. They weren't going to test Aqib Talib. They weren't going to test Chris Harris Jr. And it was, think of the runs on third down, the quick check downs. The only, you know, you're only finding Edelman when you've got him in a matchup against Corey Nelson. So you're still looking for the mismatch. But if Nelson is on Edelman, you're still talking about a play that's usually within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage for the most part. The Patriots knew where to go. They also schemed Von Miller very well. Marcus Cannon did an outstanding job against him. So, you know, to their credit, they've rebuilt that offensive line. Dante Scarnecchia, bringing him back as a coach has helped. Having good help up front help, but they knew where they wanted to what they wanted to stay away from, and they did. And given the weapons the Patriots lack at this point, I don't think they relish the notion of playing Denver in the playoffs if they have to. It's just a question whether the Broncos can get there.
Yeah, see, that's where it does get interesting. If the Patriots are in a position to help themselves or help the Broncos at the end of the year, what do you do? What do you do? Because, again, that defense will travel. And there's not too many teams the Patriots are afraid of. We've seen that, especially if they get some things in Foxborough.
It's what makes last week's loss all the more disappointing for the Broncos because the Patriots played as conservative and close to the vest a game plan as I have seen from them for Tom Brady's start. I think you'd have to go back to early in his career, the last time they had a game plan that was really like that in terms of really just taking what was there, not challenging a team deep, not challenging a team on the outside at all.
Can I throw something out there just for the sake of talk since we have it here? Because let's be honest about it. They need to run the ball. They need to not turn over the ball. They need to get more offensive points early, and they need to try to play with a lead for once and keep that crowd quiet if they can. These are keys you and I could break down most weeks, and frankly, we beat to death what the game plan needs to be for them to get a critical road win. I'm already hearing this narrative in some of the local media. And again, I have to preface this by saying I am excited to see what Paxton Lynch can be. But you know my stance. Let the kid show you in another year or two. Let him get through a full off season. Let's see what training camp shows us. I've already heard the cry of if they lose, let's see Paxton Lynch in the last game. I don't know why this town, at least its media, won't put its arms around Trevor Siemian. I understand the numbers aren't everything that you've wanted it to be, but if you will really watch a game and you will watch his calmness and gutsiness to stand in and let a charging rusher come at him as he waits just long enough so he can get a throw off to deliver a pass to a guy that's about to come over while he takes a shot, or the balls he drops in with pinpoint accuracy, or the fact that he's not freaking out in the huddle, you have to appreciate this kid, because I got news for you. If he keeps growing like this, it's going to be a heavyweight fight to figure out who the starting quarterback of this team is if Paxton can make the same jump.
And I don't see a reason why Trevor Siemian can't get better next year.
I agree.
Everyone talks about Paxton Lynch getting better. Why can't Trevor Siemian get better? He's had one season as a starter. Guys improve off of that.
Andrew, everybody acts like we've been debating this kid's play as if he's been around for 5 or 6 years. He's getting the Jake Plummer treatment, and Jake got the Jake Plummer treatment here 5 years into his career. This kid is a first-year starter in the NFL. He went from practice squad, basically. I know he's on the roster, but basically practice squad guy to first-year starter, and we're debating that we're not getting miracles out of him. Really? That's a pretty good first year, I would say.
Well, we live in an age where everyone wants it right now. There's no patience. There's no.
That's fine, but don't be so quick to chase it out the door either. You know what I mean? Again, I'm not saying the kids had a perfect year, but I'll tell you what. The last 4 weeks, I'll share something from the locker room. I've seen Demaryius Thomas come up and give the kid a big hug after every game, no matter the results. And he got a big hug this week, even after Demaryius had to take a wicked shot as Trevor dropped one into him on the sideline.
Yeah. And the other thing to consider, look how often Gary Kubiak has publicly talked about wanting more from Simeon. He doesn't do that with every player. He does that with the guys who can handle it. So that tells me that Trevor Siemian can handle being pushed, can handle the tough coaching from time to time, the tough love that you get. I've actually, in watching Trevor the last few weeks, there's a comparison that actually has hit me. Phil Sims.
Really?
I think if he develops, he could be another Phil Sims. Obviously, you're not talking about a Hall of Fame quarterback, but a guy who, when you give him a good defense and you give him a good running game, he can be that kind of leader. He's got the same toughness as Sims. He's got the same ability to shake off mistake, forget it quickly, move on as Sims. And when he's rolling, he's got the same kind of accuracy Sims has. I'll be fascinated to see what happens going forward, but there are some moments that there's a lot of testicular fortitude in Trevor Siemian's play.
Yeah, look, he's on the
and
same
that's where,
as
yeah.
Matt Paradis in that case, is he not? Because he's taking some wicked shots.
And he doesn't point fingers. Yep. I mean, he gets sacked on a three-man rush when Donald Stevenson gets beaten. Every right to be angry. You can't allow that kind of rush from when the opponent brings three men. And he just shakes it off, goes right back to the next play. That's an admirable trait. It's why he has the respect of the entire locker room. It's why he's a team captain.
And we talked with Phil Sims last week. He loves him as much as you do, so I'm sure he wouldn't mind the comparison at all. Look, again, he needs to make some reads faster. He needs to, in the interception, see that there's a second-level receiver open. I get it. Mm-hmm. That's the growth in the offseason.
And Sims had that tough love when he was young. I mean, Ray Perkins was his head coach, and he was, you know, one of the sternest guys around, but he pushed him and he prodded him and he figured out that Phil Sims could handle it, and that helped make him the kind of player he became. And certainly, I mean, maybe I'm putting too much on Trevor Siemian, but it's just a glimpse that I got that, you know, maybe that's where he can go. And if he goes in that direction, that I think the Broncos are going to be very happy.
Look, it may be a choice of, you know, would you like the steak or the lobster? Which would you like, a quarterback? Because if they can both develop, that could be the choice you're making here.
Cool. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
You too.